reason I said that this morning, that Saul put the old man to death the wrong way. This is the second part of that. Saul had feelings for himself, and he wanted everybody to feel what he was feeling, because he was a covetous man. He thought about Saul and Saul only. I kind of contrasted in the last sermon about David being king, contrasted some to Saul, and we're going to look at some other people kind of contrasted to Saul this morning, because we never see an emotion toward God that Saul displayed. Saul displayed emotion toward self-centered things, things concerning himself, things in which it was trivial and that he should have been putting off and reading that up. But he should have been tearing and rending his heart in thanking God for making him the first king of Israel, the very first king. And you know, if he'd have realized the position he had, if he'd have realized the power and authority and just where God had placed him, what he had clothed him with, that's what I said we're going to look at in Isaiah, the 50th chapter and the 51st chapter. Because it says, awake, O my sword, or awake my power, in other words. And that's what God gives us, the power. When we start doing like this sister this morning and recognize just what God did for us, it energizes us to look for and search and seek and to find God, to find out for what purpose he did this to us. See, Saul didn't see the purpose at hand in which God had saved him and how much God had did for him. Sure, he fought some of the wars against the Philistine, but eventually, if you look at Saul, and I think Saul started 1 Samuel, maybe the 9th chapter or so, about Saul, all the way to the 31st chapter. Saul pursued David more than he pursued the Philistines. Saul was looking at a personal interest, and we can't let this thing get personal. This has to be about God, and along the way, we will have those moments where we break down like David. We break down as each other in here and just cry and weep sometime. Our testimony is going to be full of emotion of God. Why do you do this for me? You give me so much power. You save me and you do so much. And I can see all that you bring me through. I can see all that you brought me to. And that's why I want to pull off these old things, the old way of life. All that weight and sin that's besetting me from running this race. Let me strip it off. Because his word shows us this. His word shows us that we have to pull off what we used to be a disciple. A disciple is a follower. And to follow Jesus Christ, you have to deny yourself. You have to lay aside that old person. That lets me know, it's been debated among a lot of scholars, was Saul actually saved, or was he a type and shadow of the professing Christian that has been granted power into the church to see the workings and the things of God? As he said, be many are called, but only a few chosen. Whether Saul was ever really chosen by God, he was called, but not chosen. There's a lot in the church. There's a lot named the name of Christ. And that's why I told you, we better wake up. We had better wake up. If we don't see the political and the religious atmosphere that we're in and what's going on around us, we will be swept away by that current. And that's why I said, you better start studying and reading and praying and walking this walk. Before you know it, somebody's going to be taking your place. Somebody else will take your place. Jesus told the people, says, look, if you don't cry out, I can make these rocks cry out and praise. Mm. See, if you set that like a bump on a log and go through life, you know, that God is just cozy with you and it don't stir nothing up in here, but the world stirs you up. A football game stirs you up. It drives you to go out and buy lottery tickets and things when the lottery gets beat. It drives you when somebody gets elected, when an election comes, that this man's going to pull us through. This man is what's going to lead us. It drives you when some event, some movie, or something comes on. All these other things is motivating and drive you. But if it don't drive you that, hey, God has saved me and he's been intervening in my life, You know what? You're not going to see God, and he's going to do as Jesus did in his parables. He's going to start speaking to those around you and closing the door in you, and you're going to be sitting in the church in the dark. You're going to be sitting in the church in the dark, lost, and wondering, how in the world I live better than these other people did? And I heard them say that all in the church won't be saved. Well, that wasn't necessarily so. It's just that he called those in the church into the church that was outside the church that had more sense than you to be able to put God's word to work when they heard it. See, a lot of us don't hear God's word, so we're not busy working for God. We're not growing in God. And that's what happened with Saul. We see that when he began, he had a sense, I don't know, it was feigned humility. Because his family wasn't a large family. It wasn't the largest family in Israel. He don't know why they chose him. He was of the tribe of Benjamin. He should have sorted that out, because if he'd have sorted that out, he'd have seen that God was going to have to turn from him or his family sooner or later. Because the tribe of Benjamin wasn't the tribe of leadership. It was the tribe of Judah. That's why we need to study the scriptures to see what's going on. We see that the zeal that Saul was driven with is the zeal that a lot of us have, a natural person has, that natural-minded man has. But it wasn't a zeal for God. It wasn't a zeal for the things of God. And we see the Spirit move that came upon Saul on different occasions. But you see, God gave it the Spirit, and God can take the Spirit away. That's why David pleaded in the Psalms, Lord, take not your Spirit away from me. See, because God can, as the things you do quench and grieve the Spirit of God, that Spirit pulls out. And see, what we don't realize, when it says the grace of God has been revealed to all men, that's common grace. In other words, we're all people of children of God in a sense. And that has appeared, that goodness that you do have, that's God's common grace unto all men. He says it rains on the just and the unjust. So we all have an opportunity that he had planted the seeds there, but it's up to us to water those seeds. It's up to us to cultivate those seeds. That's why he says, dig up your fallow ground. If you don't get out in your garden, in your flower bed or something, and you don't take a hoe or a shovel or something and cultivate that ground and dig around it and pull all the weeds and things out and pulverize that ground, when it rains, that rain's going to roll right on away from that soil, because it's going to be then got hardened and packed around it. It needs to be loose. You don't take a harrow or a hoe or something and bust up that soil so when it rains, that soil will sink in. Your hearts need to be polarized, so when you come in here this morning and have been asking and pleading for God all week to hear his word, it's in a condition where that word will fall on, follow good ground that's been tenderized and ready to hear the word, and you'll be able to receive the word. Not with hardness of heart and trying to put it all on the preacher to move you and make you feel good and shake you. No. What energizes me is that y'all been praying through the week that God talk to you today, that God give you an answer for what you're going through and strengthen you for the next step. You can't put it all on the preacher. Everybody got their thing to do. You won't always blame it on somebody else. That's what Saul does. Blaming your problems on other people. Stop blaming people. The fault is in the boat. The fault. Jonah said he had enough nerve and courage to say, look, that ain't your problem. I'm your problem. Throw me overboard. You, your own self problem. The problem is with self. You have to put off the old man. You have to strip him away. That's something God doesn't do. That's something you have to do. Now, God has sent the circumstances in your life to where he gives you a chance to pull off the old man. He'll give you chance and opportunity after opportunity to pull off the old man. But you better realize that God's in this place and you don't know it unless he reveal himself to you and you see God in these things. You better start seeing God every day in every situation, in every circumstance, because he's right there. He said he'll never leave you or forsake you. So don't think it's up to you to handle that situation. He says, bring me into every thought. Bring every thought into captivity and obedience of Jesus Christ. So you should be walking as Christ's children. It says in Ephesians, it says, living as children of light. With the Lord's authority, I say this, live no longer as the Gentiles do, for they are hopelessly confused. Their minds are full of darkness. They wander from life of God because they have closed their minds and hardened their hearts against Him. How do we do that? How do we wander away from God? How do we stray away from the light? One way to stray from the light. We come into church and we come places and things with a lot of crazy talk. You know, you ever be around people with a lot of foolish talk and that's all they talk is just vain, just talk, and they don't even put any thought into what they're saying. There's no rationale in what they say. They think and they're quick to make decisions. They act irrational at times. That's what Saul did. You see the situation going one way, and through covetousness or greed or something, it brings out the old man, it brings out lust, it brings out something from you that makes you act irrational. That was the first point, putting off the old man. See, Saul, when God chose him, we don't see too much religion in Saul, even though it says God gave him a new heart. He didn't stop to examine the scriptures, and somehow or another the book had gotten lost during some time or another. But they wasn't reading and studying God's words they should. They wasn't bringing the priests or the prophets before them to find out. Really, you have to bring the priest. That's why he made us a royal priesthood, because that's our job, is to teach God's word, to explain God's word to people, to let them know. And that's what we should do, a royal priesthood. We should be busy teaching others. But to be able to teach others, we must be taught. Yes. You can't lead unless you're able to follow. So as we see Saul, Jonathan inspired. Jonathan was a man of God. No doubt Jonathan was saved. Jonathan had the Philistines en route. Jonathan and his armor bearer had went down to the Philistine camp while Saul was sitting there doing something else, his father. And Saul, Jonathan and his armor bearer had went down to the Philistine camp, and he says, look, let's go in and take these circumcised Philistines. And he says, if God's with us, we can take them. And he climbed up, and Jonathan started a rout of the Philistines, and Saul and the people heard what was going on. They heard a lot of noise and racket, and they said the Philistines are on the run. Well, people that wasn't on their side, people who had deserted them, all joined in. They joined in to defeat the Philistines. That's why you see today, as some churches get new equipment and get new and people start coming in, that's how they get large. That's how they become mega churches. At one time, you know, Brother Swagger was real hot. We had people from the ghetto here, right here, coming to this community, flooding out, giving him tons of money because, you somebody if you're sitting with Jimmy Swagger. You somebody if you're following Jimmy Swagger. Let's give him all these things. Because people love a crowd. Right now, the other church that it is, healing place or something like that. I can't name all of the mega things because I don't want to attack them. I don't want to become like Saul fighting internally. But all the people on television, all the mega churches, people love to go where it's a crowd. And you can get lost in a crowd. You don't have to do much when you're in a crowd. I don't know if you've seen that advertisement me and Sister Jackson seen where this one guy pumping this bicycle real, real hard, and this guy, other guy sitting on the back of the bicycle, and the guy says, you pounding? He said, yeah, I'm trying to make up for you. If you don't watch it, people will be in the church, and it's only a few that's going to be working, and the rest of them ain't going to be working. This guy was working hard as he can, pounding the bike, and the other guy sitting on the back, yeah, I'm pounding, I'm trying to make up for you. You could be working hard, but other people just could be riding in the boat. It's a lot of people in church. And the Word of Faith churches point them out, they find them out, because they put your name on the books and everything. They find out who's pulling the load, who ain't pulling the load. Because they know within a crowd, it's easy to hide in a crowd. There's danger in a crowd, though. There's danger in a crowd. But they seen that the Philistines was in rout, but it was Jonathan who had started this thing. If this church get hot, believe me, it would be so many people coming out of the woodworks. I've been in churches where testimony service, you know, the pastor told me, said, well, look, Brother Jackson, when they started, let's try to limit, because I talked with him about it. We had to limit testimony service because people love a show and they get up there testifying and stay up there long as the preacher. And you have all kinds of people wanting to testify because it's a lot of people. That's a time, a chance for them to stand up on their soapbox in BC. And so as Jonathan was riding the Philistines and this thing had got busy, Saul took over there and they started really beating the Philistines. And Saul said, look, let me issue an ultimatum today. He said, verse 24 of 1 Samuel, 14th chapter, he said, but the men of Israel were hard pressed that day because Saul had put the people under a curse, saying, cursed be the man who eats food before evening and before I have taken vengeance on my enemies. So none of the people ate any food. He made a rash decision there. He seen things going good. He thought he could make it going better by pressing his men not to eat. But you know what? He had put them under a curse. Jonathan didn't know about that curse. He didn't know about Saul that said not to do this. And Jonathan had been robbing the enemies, but the people that was getting tired. That's why I say sometimes it's good to stop and eat. God may have not created you to fast at that time or whatever. You remember when the people had fasted 14 days or whatever on the ship and Paul was on the ship and said, look, take some food you hadn't eaten. Or you remember when Jesus was preaching to the multitude and he said, well, I've been preaching, these people have been following me for 3 days. Unless they faint on the way back, let me stop and feed these people. If you're not a seasoned faster or whatever, your body needs to eat at some time. I said, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of God's mouth. But you do need to eat.
Yeah.
If you don't eat, you're going to have a problem. You will need some kind of protein and carbohydrates. Every once in a while, you need a little sugar to lighten you up or whatever if you're lacking some energy. Jonathan took his spear and stuck it in some honey, and he put it to his mouth, and his eyes lighten up, and it invigorated him. It's like waking up in the morning, get the nice hot cup of coffee. Sometimes you need something to stimulate you. You know, the Word of God stimulates me. Other people stimulate me that's serving God. That's where I get my pleasure at, seeing those that serve God. Jonathan was like that. And he says, you know, my father made a mistake by issuing that. When they told Jonathan what his father said, he said he made a mistake by doing that. He said, because the men could have been much stronger and been a much better rout of the people. You know, but like I said, a lot of times people in charge that shouldn't be in charge, they love a lot of money or they love a lot of power or prestige. They love to be in charge, but they shouldn't be in charge. We got people right now that's in charge that shouldn't be in charge. There's a lot of men that's running the household where the woman might need to be in charge of the purse string. Yeah, sure. Did I say that's the way God had it designed? I didn't say that, but they are a pair. She is a helpmate. If he can't spend or can't budget his money properly, some women are better at that. The majority of them are. So just because you're a man, that doesn't mean you're smarter. That you better at. God might not have gifted you for that gift. See, and he didn't pull off self. You know, he should have inquired. He should have taken time. But we see, like I said, Saul wasn't one that was looking for God. It's like a lot of us, when we come into the church and we start serving God, we go back into people. So he goes to church and whatever, and that makes you think you're somebody, because people tell you you go to church and you go to church all day. Yeah, you're in church now. But what is he doing? Do you see that life out of church? Does it make you respect him? Does it make you start going to church? The people that tell you about going to church, do they go to church? So if they don't go to church and have an active life of God, it don't matter to me whether you say I go to church or not, because your opinion don't matter.
you don't know what church does for people. If it builds you up that people that don't go to church, you got a problem.
You got a serious problem. That's the old man in you that love accolades, that love to be admired, that love to be heard. We see, like I said, all these things that we're talking about in Colossians and Ephesians about pulling off is internal things. So you couldn't see that pride. You couldn't see that idolatry. You couldn't see covetousness and certain things. You know, just because you're going to church, you might see that this guy commits adultery or fools around, steals or do this. Those are obvious sins. You can see those things. But what about the hidden sins that are in the heart? The ones when squeezed come out. The ones that people don't know whether you're doing or not. It's hidden in there. Saul had witchcraft and idolatry. We have witchcraft and idolatry in us, whether we know it or not. We thieves also. A lot of us are thieves. We steal and rob God. We know that that was in Saul. Witchcraft and idolatry. That's my second point. Why did I say that? Why did I say that about Saul? Because not to completely obey God or incomplete obedience is disobedience. You're not fully following God. You're not following God. You know to do good. See, Saul compromised himself and it grieved God because he had made him king. God had told him in 1 Samuel 15 chapter 2 through 3. This is what the Lord of heaven and the armies have declared. I have decided to settle the accounts with the nation of Amalek for opposing Israel when they came from Egypt. Now go down and completely destroy the babies. Yep, the little baby children. Cattle, the sheep, the goats, and the camels and donkeys. Everything. Kind of sounds like Ezekiel when he said, go through the city. He told the angels, go through the city, slay old and young. Don't spare nobody. Get the old people and the young people first, and then get your mother. Get all of them. Kill them all. Kill them all. If God tells you to kill and put to death, you do as his mother told us. What did his mother tell us at the wedding of Canaan when Jesus said, let's just pour some water in the barrels? And it was asking the question. Mary said, whatever he say, do it, just do it. Yes. Whatever Jesus say, whatever God tells us, just do what he say. You don't need to figure it out. Don't try to figure God out. Do what you can't figure him out. You're right, you can't figure him out. It's impossible. He says, Saul and his men spared Agag's life and kept the best of the sheep and goats and the cattle and the fat calves and the lambs and everything, in fact, that appealed to them. They destroyed only what was worthless or what was poor quality, but they didn't obey the Lord. That's what I say. Swaggart had a wealthy bandwagon. A lot of these churches and things, a lot of the televangelists and things, if preachers and things have money and showing money, that's the ones you want to be with. But he's a poor preacher, he's a poor person. The poor is hated for what he is because of his poverty, because it reminds us of us a lot of times. You would go and give to a wealthy church if you were sitting in a wealthier church more than you would if you was to go to an old church that didn't have anything. Because it makes you feel part of them, a part of being somebody. So they spared the good stuff. But God had told them to destroy all of it. They saved Amalek. In other words, by saving Agag. They destroyed only the poor people of the poor at Amalek. And they spared some of the good stuff, and they say, we're going to sacrifice that to God. I don't know if God wanted that or not. Huh? What you think? If you go do part of what God say, do. But I did obey the Lord. Saul insisted I carried out the mission he gave me. I brought back King Agag. Right there, his own mouth condemning him because he was told to destroy Agag. I brought back King Agag, but I destroyed everybody else. I kill them all except Agag. Then my troops brought in the best of the sheep, goats, cattle, and plunder to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal. But Samuel said, has the Lord a great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obedience to the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed is better than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as serious as the sin of divination, in other words, fortune-telling, in witchcraft. And disobedience is as serious as false religion and idolatry. That's why I said we all are idolatrous to a point, because to be disobedient and rebellious is just like, it's just as serious a sin as witchcraft and idolatry. They go equal. They the same. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he also has rejected you from being king. He put you away because you didn't completely follow God. And see, that's what I say. That's by half doing something for the Lord. Now, that follows something now. If Saul was king this long, he would have knew to obey God to the complete. I've had people, and probably a lot of us, and I know myself, I followed that road. And when I came into the church, and I was saddled with so much problem and so many bills and so many things that I couldn't tie it to God, because my budget was already stretched past where I was. I would have been broke if I'd have tried. I didn't have it. But I did give him something. As we went on and time went on, I'm looking, you know, this is partial disobedience. So to grow in faith, how many years or how long did it take y'all to where you had a full time regard? But you got that. You have to pull off the old thing. In other words, the minute you finish that old bill, the minute you finish that other stuff, don't get nothing else, because if I get something else, I can't pay God. Let me put it to where I can pay God and not get as much. See, I have to sacrifice on my side, not God's side. I have to start saying, well, cable can wait. I can't get Cox. I can't get DirecTV. My pleasures, you know, much as this sister like watermelons, a different thing. Sometimes, some weeks, she say, well, I can't this week, Pastor, I can't. But I've never seen a week where she didn't put anything in that basket. You see what I'm saying? God has to come first. That's pulling off the old man, concern for yourself. Saul and his people were concerned for themselves. I can't kill this king because I'm worried about the people. I can't sacrifice all this stuff because this is good stuff. I've seen that happen, people's good stuff. My sister, all the stuff she had was good stuff, and all that's been sold away, gotten rid of. I had a person, a member in the church one time, his good stuff, he left church and all that, and they were talking the other day, he had a brand new, almost a new Suzuki motorcycle or whatever, but where is it now? Don't even know what happened to it. But where is he? Somewhere without God. Somewhere not knowing what the stuff is. What happened to the stuff? Either that he even had the stuff. How do you get in a position that you turn against God and buy stuff? God will get your mind so messed up, you'll be around and don't even know you had the stuff that you abandoned God for. That's the way that goes. That's the fit you get in. You have to put God first. So we can't blame it to age. As old as Moses was, as much as we talk about Bernie Sanders or you talk about Trump or these people, they're in their 70s and 80s, but they still got mind. They're still dressing themselves. They're still getting up. We have to know that God will keep up. We run around here 50, 60, 70. In fact, well, this excuse, I'm getting this and that. No. God could keep you. Yeah. You have to wonder why he ain't keeping you. Not be jealous or envious of somebody else, but Lord, what's the story with me? Why did you save me? Why did I ain't in the same shape that person is? What is it that you see in me? That's what David said. Examine me. What do I need to do, God? Let me pull off that, the reason you keep me in the shape you keep me in. That's what happened. But Saul was so quick. And that's what I say. The sin of rebellion and disobedience is just like the sin of witchcraft. I knew what happened to the motorcycle. I knew what happened to the car, the truck, and all these things. It'll get rust and moth. I can't follow those rabbit trails because I have to follow God. In the last days, Saul did resort to divination and witchcraft. He did resort to it. That's what destroyed him. He had, at one time, fought against the witches and the familiar spirits. He had put them all away. The woman was somewhere scared to death. God wasn't answering Saul. It comes a time when God stops answering your prayer. It comes a time when God stops listening to your doing for you because he can't get through for you. He can't get through to you. And that's the way it got with Saul. Saul went back looking for a familiar spirit, the witch of Endor. And he got into divination, necromancy, and talking to the dead because he asked a woman to raise up Samuel so Samuel could give him advice. That's definitely against God's word, that, talking to the dead. That's why on the Mount of Transfiguration, he told him not to say anything to after his resurrection about him and Moses talking, Moses and Elijah talking to him. Because it's definitely necromancy to talk to the dead. Don't let people say, well, my mama told me this or that. No, you're talking to the dead. Something's wrong here. Can't do that. But that's, if you want to read on that, that's 1 Samuel 28, chapter 7 through the 21st verse, 25th verse. But Saul blamed his men. He said, but the people say this. I was afraid of the people. Let's go to that verse if we can. When Samuel told him that he said that he was afraid of the people. And, you know, I find that problematic as the preacher because Okay, as we read in 1 Samuel 23, verse 6, for rebellion is a sin of witchcraft, and you've transgressed the Lord. Verse 24. And Saul said, Samuel, I've sinned, for I've transgressed the commandments of the Lord and thy words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voices. That's the problem. When you fear people, you're scared of what your wife will say. You listen at your wife. That's what happened. God told Abraham, for listening at your wife, you got a problem. But his wife had came up with some deal about him going into Hagar. That was his wife's answer. But God had talked with Abraham, and he disobeyed what God said. See, God hadn't given us the spirit of fear. And that's why I say to run your household, to run the church of God, you have to stand when others stand against you. A preacher has to preach, and there's going to be a lot of people sitting out there in the audience staring at you, mad saying you better not say it. And that's why a lot of the mega churches and things, you don't hear them preaching against sin because the wolves are making the building paper. You go to talking against them, they go pack up their little caboose and go, and then you can have that big old church to pay for by yourself. You can have that big television ministry and stuff to pay, so they can't touch them there. But you need to speak God's word as Jesus did and say, you going to, when everybody else gets their stuff, you going to. If you look at the Apostle Paul in the book of Corinthians, Jesus didn't talk about it, but he gave it to Paul to talk about. If a believer chooses to dwell, they can. But if the husband or the wife don't want to follow God, and you following God and y'all not in agreement, adios. Adios. You can walk. That's scripture. let them depart. That's what the word of God said. If an unbeliever, and they can't dwell together because I'm the Father of God, you can't say I'm taking the money and paying God, because that's God's money. I'm robbing God if I don't pay God. If I'm not paying my tithe and offering, that makes me a robber of God. That's what Malachi said. You've all robbed me. You've robbed me in tithes and offering. That's stealing. It's not your money in the first place. Because if you're in the Word long enough, and I told you as I seen it, I was stealing from God. If I'm giving 5%, I'm stealing from God, because it should be 10%. Huh? We're robbing God. So we have to look at this. Like I said, we have to look at the internal sin, not no great big sins. Because one sin is sin. Sin is sin. That's why God can't bless our lives or don't bless us, because He's not going to bless us walking in darkness. You have to pull off that old way looking for yourself. You have to depend on God and trust God. If I do what God say do, He's going to take care of me, then there'll be food in the household. The widow, she couldn't have fed her son before she fed Elijah. He said, feed me first, and then you and your children could eat. But if she would have said, well, look, let me just put some aside case for my son, and then me and you can die. Let me just feed you first. No, that's halfway disobedience. So the kid, not till they gagging and saying some of the stuff, that's halfway disobedience. I told you all of it. The sin that Achan and Ai was that he stole some of the stuff, and God said, burn it off. Burn it off. The halfway due of incomplete disobedience is total disobedience. So he died at the hand in witchcraft. He was fearful, he says. He was afraid of the people. Huh? You scared? He says, fear not him that destroy the whole body. Fear him that can destroy the whole body and soul in hell. Don't fear man. All he can do is kill you. But after I kill you, I can torture you. For the rest of your life, I can put you in torment and smother in the ashes and fire in the lake of fire. That's who you fear. That's the one I'd be scared of. With fear and trembling you serve God. Proverbs, I tell y'all, we read in Proverbs, and you know, I heard a preacher the other day say he reads it each month, and it's got 31 days. That's much more than me. I suggest read it at least once a year in a month for 31 days. So I think I'm going to start reading it more in some of the months for 31 days. Chapter 29. How many have read this one in chapter 29 of Proverbs? And pull chapter verse 25 out there, Sister Jackson. He says, fearing people is a dangerous trap, but trusting the Lord means safety. Now that's in the Living Version. Now I put it more plainly. Fearing people is a dangerous trap. And Saul says, I was afraid of the people. Now the King James reads, the fear of man brings a snare, but whoever trusts in and puts his confidence in the Lord will be exalted to safety. That's the King James and the Amplified. That's a snare. That's a trap. To be scared of man. That's a dangerous trap. To show you that I said you have to pull off, God gives you boldness. You remember Peter was scared of the servant girl because when the servant girl said, no, you was one of them. And Peter started swearing and cursing that he wasn't with Jesus. Three different times he denied he knew him because he was afraid of what people was going to do. But look what the Spirit did in Peter as Peter grew in the Lord.
Yeah.
They had took him before the council. They was ready to take Peter's life. And they told Peter, he says, look, didn't we command you straightly not to preach no more in this man's name?
Yeah.
And Peter says, it is better to obey God than man. That's old brother Peter. Now he was scared at one time, but what do you say? It's better to obey God than man. Your obedience should be God. Full obedience. Anytime anybody entertaining you toward any disobedience toward God, you should make them walk. You should tell them to walk. We see where Saul, when they was fighting the Philistines, after the first time, the second time they were fighting them, they came out and they had a big giant with them, Goliath. Goliath had threatened him.
You know, that's something when somebody threatens you. That's against the law to threaten people.
And Goliath had threatened him, the ninth verse of the 17th chapter, 1 Samuel. Goliath stood and shouted and taunted across to the Israelites. "Why are you all coming out to fight?" he called. "I'm the Philistine champion, but you are only the servants of Saul. Choose one man to come down here and fight me. If he kills me, then we will be your slaves. But if I kill him, you will be our slaves. I defy the armies of Israel today. Send me a man out to fight me." When Saul and Israel heard this, they were terrified and deeply shaken. Here the king is. He in that same hole with the rest of the men, shaking in a prayer. He's scared to death too. He wasn't going out there. He was hunkered down with the rest of them. Because Goliath was a big rascal. He was a pretty big guy. But David, God's spirit was... Now, it didn't say he had anointed David to be king. But you see how David was growing in the Lord? He was putting on courage and he pulled everything off. He says, "I'll go and fight with him."
Yeah.
Who is this guy to think he could defy the living God?
Yeah.
David, a little boy, and Saul said, "Look, here's all my equipment." He put his equipment on it. His sword, his armor, his shield. And David, "Hey, man. I'm not used to this. This is a little bit too heavy for me. I tell you what, let me just take my slingshot, which I'm used to, and fire stones here, and I'll deal with it." You see, because what happens is, we try to go get concordances, we try to go get this, we try to study this. What did God tell you? You know, sometimes some itinerant preacher, backwood preacher, he don't know how to read or whatever. The sisters and things have to read to him, but he could preach the word of God to you. He know what God is. He don't have to have some helicopter and some jet and a yacht and all that, piling all that luxury thing with a Rolls Royce. Some of these jackland preachers, some of these preachers around here preach just as strong and preach the message of God, and that give you more power than those mega preachers do. You know, but all that, and David went out and killed Goliath. David went out and killed Goliath, and all that, Saul was carrying that grudge around. He hated David. Everything David do looked like it would turn to gold. And Saul just wasn't good. He carried a grudge around. In the book of Leviticus, it says, "You shall not take revenge nor bear any grudge against the sons of God's people, but you shall love your neighbor, your acquaintance, associates, or companion, as yourself." You see, so the love of God that's shed abroad in our hearts, that David, as you study God's word, you remember I told you it was line up on line, precept on precept? If you see in the whole counsel of God, Saul would have realized it's God's job to take vengeance.
Yes.
And so did I read to you that God says it's time for me to take vengeance, a level of score with Amalek? That's why Saul was going to be the avenger there, because Amalek had attacked Israel when they was headed to the promised land. All of the wheat, all of the oil and infirm at the back of Israel's tribe that were moving through, Amalek attacked them. Remember I told you about metaphors and things? Satan is as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Usually the lion try to single out the weakest one in the herd. He try to single out that outlier. That's just like a woman. She see you looking and have an eye for, she'll single you out. That's what Solomon talks about the adulterous woman. She knows you and she sees you and she's after your heart. In other words, that money and everything in her pocket, but that's your life that's gone. You're going to lose your life. Satan sees you. And Satan is in all kinds of guises and forms. It's just an adversary. But see, Satan could be that advertising firm that advertises something on television, knowing you got the money, but you want to hurry up and buy that. And it says if you order in the next 15 minutes, we'll give you an extra one. That's to make you hurry up and do it so you won't think about it and change your mind. So, you know, I ain't got time. If I wait till that, if they wait till next week and think about it, that they didn't really need it anyhow. They want to get it while you're excited, and you go on and order it, and then you find out, oh, man, I shouldn't have spent that money. That was for something else. Yeah. Satan comes in all kinds of guises and he's seeking to devour you or pull you away. But you need to pull off that old man that's given to pleasures and desires and irrational, quick impulses and making quick deals. You need to pull all of that off. But Saul was greater than David because he had killed Goliath. He had did all these other things. And we should be thinking about other people. But David, it was special. You remember I told you the internal sins?
Yeah.
This guy on television was saying, if you're driving down the down the road and somebody jumps in front of you and slam on brakes and you run in the back of them, that Liberty Mutual will forgive you. You know, they'll forget about it. They don't carry a grudge. And he looked over at his wife and said, you hear that? Because you know your wife can carry a grudge. They'll remember something you did last week or week before last that they wasn't finished talking to you about that. They'll bring it back up. They'll carry that grudge. You remember what somebody did to you last week. Sometimes people carry a grudge so long they forget what they was mad at somebody about. You know, that's me too. I have to stop that because I tell my wife sometimes, I say, I wasn't going to watch this no more. I wasn't going to do this. I don't know why I say I was going to stop watching this or doing this, but I did say I was going to stop. But it must have been a good reason because I stopped. You know, we all do those things. And, you know, my grudge against TV is that it's weaning me off television. You know, I can't find nothing on watch hardly. That's why I was, my grudge against television helped me to get rid of Cox and DirecTV and all those other things because I said, you know, I got cable, but I'm watching things, old movies and other stuff. I'm sitting here watching Murder, She Wrote or some other thing that is not as violent or trickery as the new show because the new shows are really horrible to watch and you end up cheering them to the wrong thing. So it's nothing new on television. It's just a more violent way to do it and it's doing something to my internal being. So I guess carrying a grudge in that way is like being angry and sinning and not. If it drives you to strength or something, it's different. See, anger is all right. It says, be angry, but don't sin. I can't be around a man. I wouldn't want to be around a man. Saul was a man I wouldn't want. Because a man that is sown angry is a dangerous man. But a man that can't be angry, he's a dangerous man. Also, because if you don't get mad about something, man, look here, we're in trouble. We are really trouble. But bitterness, anger and bitterness is two different things. Bitterness is feeling that you hadn't been treated fairly and that you have a malicious intent of this thing causes you. And that's why a lot of people have a lot of the illnesses and the sicknesses they have because they're bitter inside. They're bitter because they didn't get the certain job somebody else had. They're bitter. They was born a certain way. That they overweight people a lot of times. They're bitter at smaller people. They're bitter at other people. People with different wealth is, you know, the wealthy people are bitter with the poor people and the poor people bitter with the wealthy people because they're wealthy. Bitterness is horrible. You know, a lot of, why was I born this way? Why this happened to me? I hadn't been treated fairly, God. Why is this? And that's bitterness. And sometimes we can become insecure in our bitterness. He was insecure about the throne. I better hurry up here. But he was very insecure about the throne. And he fought David. Like I said, it became a personal vendetta with him against David about that throne. I told you about the women saying, David killed his Saul killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. You know, from that point in time on, after then, that Saul sought to kill David and that he had David in his scope ever since that time, and that bitterness caused his destruction. That's what caused Saul's destruction, his bitterness and anger at David. He had turned into a personal vendetta. I told you earlier that others can see a wrong in contrast in others in the church and places. Two people seeing that David was supposed to be king. Saul seeing that David was supposed to be king, but it made him bitter because he felt the throne was his. He didn't want to succeed. You know, it's a lot of people
sometimes it's time to give up control. We have that problem in families and things. Sometimes it might be time to give up authority and let your children start making the decisions. Some things, it's time. It's that time. God had rejected Saul and he chose David. Jonathan, his son, had seen that. And I told you, a church should have discernment. We should have people with discernment. 1 Samuel 18:3-4. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. And Jonathan stripped himself of the outer robe that he was wearing and gave it to David with his armor, including his sword, his bow, and his belt, as a brother. And that's what we see in the church. Some people in the church, you feel united to your church family, should be closer to you than your personal family. And that's how he was united. David and Jonathan and Saul's daughter Micah loved David more than they loved the father because they had fulfilled their purpose. Saul was, that's why I don't think he was a bleed. But his daughter and his son loved that which was right. Both of them loved David. Jonathan loved him with his whole heart. If you read verse 16 through 18 in the 23rd chapter of 1 Samuel, Jonathan and Saul's sons arose and went to David into the woods and strengthened his hand in God. And he said unto him, fear not, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find thee, and thou shalt be king over Israel, and I shall be next unto thee, that also Saul my father know, that also my father Saul knoweth it, that you should be king. And the two made a covenant before the Lord, and David abode in the woods, and Jonathan went to his house. That's why David made Mephibosheth and brought him to live with him, because him and Jonathan was brothers. Regardless of what T.D. Jakes or anybody else said, this was a man-to-man love. We should love one another. It wasn't wrong with this love that they had. Abigail, you remember Nabal's wife Abigail? She knew it. 1 Samuel 25th chapter 10th verse in the 24th through the 31st verse. Whereas Nabal, he wasn't of God. He says, who is this fellow David? Nabal sneered to the young men. Who does the son of Jesse think he is? There are lots of servants these days who run from their masters. He belittled David. He was bitter against David. But Abigail, his wife, said this. She fell at his feet and said, I accept all the blame in this matter, my Lord. All that my husband says, he's a fool. That's why I say the wife don't have to stick with the husband in the Lord. He's a fool. Please listen to what I have to say. I know Nabal is a wicked and ear-tippered man. That's why his name is Nabal. Nabal means fool or ignorant. Please don't pay any attention to him. He's a fool, just as his name suggests. But I never even saw the young men you sent. Now, my Lord, as surely as the Lord lives, and you yourself live, since the Lord has kept you from murdering and taking vengeance into your hands, let all your enemies be as those who tried to harm you be cursed as Nabal is cursed, as her husband is cursed. She knew her husband was cursed. Abigail ended up being David's wife. God takes vengeance, so he took vengeance on Nabal and he killed him. He got drunk and he died in his own vomit. God takes vengeance. You should know that. Abigail had put off her pride and thing and came to David, accepted that, and said, blame it not to her, but her charge. She didn't see the young men when they came, and Nabal said what he said because he's a fool. And she said, when the Lord has done all he promised and has made you leader of Israel, don't let this be a blemish on your record. So she knew. God had showed her. That's as I was saying Wednesday night, that God has showed you about this guy that we was talking about, that I said that that's a wolf in sheep's clothing coming into the church. We must make each other aware of these things. That's why Paul says after he lived, leave or died, grievous wolves was to come in. But as long as the shepherd there, he's not going to let a wolf in. See, the wolf has to die. The wolf has to die. That's why you see a lot of preachers. That's why you see a lot of people packed out of there. As Sister Harris was saying, I passed the funeral right down from my house this morning. The church down my house, they was having their service there. We will be packed out of here one way or another. Life is very serious, but it's up to you whether you've developed that right character or not.
You have a chance now to live for God. It's too late for the preacher to lie and get up over you and say this and say that about you. We know what your life is. We know how you lived. But from it says in verse 9, put a big, I got that in bold on my letter, 18 and 9. So from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David. He hated David from that point on. He was malicious. That was malice of Saul. Saul carried a lot of malice in him. And we know his malice started to David develop. And they was enemies for the rest of his life. And like I said, Saul spent most of his life, instead of pulling off the old man, he spent that fighting and developing the old man, ways to trap David. Verse 17 says, one day Saul said to David, I'm ready to give you my older daughter Merab as your wife. But first you must prove yourself to be a real warrior by fighting the Lord's battles. For Saul thought, I'll send him out against the Philistines and let them kill him rather than doing it myself. There's a lot of people that's full of malice that want other people to do their work, their dirty work, and all they do is plot and scheme. Here's this man, the first thing he do malicious is that he uses older daughter to get to David, to get David killed. He didn't have any integrity though. Then he gave that daughter that he promised to David, he gave her to someone else. So when the time came for Saul to give his daughter, verse 19, Merab in marriage to David, he gave her instead to Adriel, a man from Mahola. So now David seeing Saul in a different light. His second attempt also was using another one of his daughters, verse 20 through 22. Now Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David, and when they told Saul, it pleased him, and Saul said, I will give her to him so that she can become a snare, a bad influence, a source of trouble to him, and the hand of Philistines be against him. So he had men come to David and try to persuade David to allow her to be there. She loved David. She told David when her daddy was trying to kill David, just as Jonathan did. Her love caused jealousy and envy, and it brought a curse up on her at one time because David was dancing that joy I told you before the Lord, and she said something to David for dancing before the Lord. But she actually loved David. I guess David loved her. It was the principal thing because Saul had gave her to somebody else too later on when he was trying to kill David. David was running away, but David made that one of the conditions of him coming back. When he did come back, he did go get her and bring her back as his wife. And I don't know if they had conjugal relations after then, because like I say, God had put a curse on her to where she couldn't have children or anything from that day forward. But like I said, the inward sins. The church is full of them. We're full of them. We have to pull it off and lay aside. If anyone's saying in here today that you're going to leave out of here and stick your chest out and you feel you're good to somebody, Israel was the same way. When Joshua, during the time of Joshua, Joshua said, by throwing away the gods that be among them, and I told you we're all idolaters, and that idolatry was in the camp of Israel throughout, just like idolatry is in the church today, this nation, and that's why I say, we should see the idolatry, the covetousness, the hatred of God, of the church people today. The people that call themselves of God. That's the fault. That's where it lies at. It's within the church. That's why Jesus said he's the fight against the church. That's how I'm concluding this thing. It's that the problem lies within the church. That we are not pulling off the old man. We have to pull it off. Even though God choose you, you still have stuff that you have to pull off. Saul neglected to pull these things off. And I told you, just like us, he was full of idolatry and covetousness. The same was so with his daughter. The same. Why did he say this? So that she could be a snare to him. You know, a lot of men know their children better than they think that other people think they do. He says she's going to be a snare to him. She was an idolater just like her father was. How do we know these things? The Bible tells us. I told you that Wednesday night. The Bible interprets itself. Let's read one verse to close that out. If we read about that whole affair of David, Michael loving David, it was the 19th chapter of the 1 Samuel, 11 through the 16th verse. But we're going to pull verse 13 out to show you that idolatry was rampant in Israel. Even though God had chose Saul, Saul didn't pull off idolatry to his children. Verse 13. Michael had told David to flee for his life, and that her daddy had said he was going to kill him. And she let him down by a rope out of the house. And when David fled, Michael said, "Now they're going to come looking for him. Let me put something in the bed to make it look like David when they look in and they're taking sleep." Y'all have seen that on television, how somebody look like they sleep, they put something in there to look like a person. Yeah. What can I find to put in this bed to make it look like David? I can put one of our idols in there. Hold on now. You're saying, yeah, but they shouldn't have idols, because God said you shouldn't have idols or images, right? If you read the 13th verse there, it says, "And Michael took the household idol." That's what it says in the Living, in the King James. It says, "She took the household image and laid it on the bed, put a pillow of goat's hair on his head, and covered it with clothes." What was she doing with the idol in there? What was she doing? It was just like Rachel. You remember Rachel had stole Laban's gods and had hid them in a camel's chest. You know, don't we in the church, it's a lot of us hadn't pulled off the old man. We still got those weights and sins that's besetting us from running this race in the Ephesian church. When Paul came to preach after they had been converted 2 years, we read in the book of Acts, when Paul came to Ephesus to preach, that after he preached, they were saying, "Great is the goddess Diana," that Paul preached, and the people brought all of their books on witchcraft and magic and stuff, and they burned them in the city square, and it was worth thousands of dollars. If they had been converted 2 years, why did they still have these things? Why did they still have these things? It's just like us stashing that pair of jeans, that dress, whatever it was that we used to could wear 10 years ago, thinking that you will be able to wear it again. No way, Jose. You just was to give it to somebody else. You just was to give it away. You're not going to get that weight again. You can, but it's going to require sacrifices. It's going to require living the way you was living 10 years ago, twice over, because now there are other factors in play that your body don't burn energy the same way. You don't move as much. You're not as energetic. Metabolism is not the same. So to get back there, it's like I was telling somebody the other day, the lady was saying, "Well, I don't know why my friend don't lose weight. She eats like a bird or whatever." And she weighed almost 300 pounds. Yeah, she might stop eating, but now you got to do something to reverse that was already there, the consequences of that eating. You see what I'm saying? You have to have less caloric intake, but you have to burn those calories that's there. Just like those books, you have to burn it. Just like the sin in us, though God saves us, now we got to burn that sin that's in us. We have to pull off that old life. If you used to be grouchy, contrary, and bitter, you have to pull all that off. All that's weights and sins that's besetting you from running this race. So let us run the race by pulling these things off. Let us not become like Saul, and that become our destruction.